Hey, Sherry.
Well, hi, Glenn. How are you?
I'm good. I've got my radio voice on.
All right, honey. Let's talk radio.
I like that.
I'm sorry. I don't know how to talk radio.
That's okay. I wanted to talk to you today a bit about qualitative research.
Oh, I don't know a thing about qualitative research.
Right. You've been doing it for 20 years.
That's true. And even before, even in college.
Do you think everybody knows what qualitative research is as opposed to quantitative research, or do you want to maybe say a word about it?
Well, quantitative research is when you put together a survey that is asked in the exact order, and you try to take out as much interviewer bias as possible. So the interviewer is reading the survey almost in a monotone, question by question by question. There are a lot of closed-ended questions, you know, yes or no questions, things that have absolute answers. There are a few open-ended questions where people are allowed to say whatever's on their mind and they have to be coded, but there are only a few of them. There are multiple choice questions. The writer of the questionnaire has an idea already about how people will probably answer the questions, and they give them that selection.
I got it.
Whereas in a qualitative interview, when it's done properly, it's very open-ended. And basically, you're fishing, because you have areas where you're looking for information and you want to get as broad a possible response and as deep a possible response as you can. When it's done properly, it's a little bit more anxiety-producing.
For the interviewer.
For the interviewer. Well, and for the interviewee, for both. But, you know, that's the kind of that thingy outside the box. As you get to the box, there's a little anxiety, and that's when you get more of the creative process. And you're looking for that because you're looking for insight. I think that the reason that you're asking me this question is that unschooled interviewers trying to do a qualitative questionnaire where they want to just go and ask prospects what they're thinking become uncomfortable. And what they will do is make some mistakes.
Yeah. Well, because it requires a totally different set of personal skills. Like for the quantitative interview, you're really not looking for creativity in the way the questions are asked. You're not really looking for someone who can follow their line of thinking. You're really looking for someone who can stick to the structure. It's relatively hard to mess it up for a quantitative interview, right?
Right. It's a little bit more boring. So if you have someone who's a more creative spirit, they're not going to enjoy doing it as much.
Right.
But you can't make a mistake with it.
Right. You're right. But the reason I was asking is that I think that intuitively, most business owners know it's a good idea to talk to their prospects and customers. And most people probably aren't aware of the special skill that they could use in doing that to get the most out of it. Many people may feel uncomfortable as they're getting involved in that and not really know how to get to the insights that really will help them in their business. So I was hoping you could talk a little bit about that.
So, for example, let's do something for fun.
Okay.
Let's pretend I have a dog store. You know how much you and I love our dog.
I know.
And you knocked on my door, and you come in, and I say, so, can I help you?
Yes, I was thinking about getting a Great Dane. Do you have any Great Danes?
Well, actually, we sell clothes for Great Danes. Were you interested in maybe some clothes for Great Dane?
I don't have a Great Dane yet, so I don't really have anybody to put clothes on.
So that was very interesting right there, which is going in with an expectation of what the person's coming in for and you selling something else, and there would be a tendency to try to push them in that direction.
Mm-hmm.
So that's interesting right there. We just demonstrated a very fascinating thing. Our keyword search was on Great Danes. Person comes to the door looking for a Great Dane, but we sell Great Dane clothing.
Right.
That wasn't what I was trying to demonstrate, but that was great.
What were you trying to demonstrate?
What I was trying to do was demonstrate that when the customer is not sure of how to articulate what they want and they hem and haw a little bit, or they pause, a lot of interviewers get very nervous.
I see.
And they start asking leading questions. So, for example, we don't have any Great Danes, but we do have German Shepherds, and we have Doberman, and we have Great Pyrenees.
Well, which is perfectly appropriate if you're selling, but if you're really trying to find out what's on people's minds as they're coming in and how you can best please them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Before you could do that, though, notice the assumption that I was making about the Great Dane, that it was all about size. Maybe they had heard something else about the Great Dane, like they're extremely loyal, they're very easy with children.
So you think that the major mistake that people make when they're doing a qualitative interview with their customers and prospects is that they ask leading questions?
I think that's one of them. They make assumptions. A leading question is because they're making an assumption.
Could we redo that scenario and show me how you would do the interview if you weren't going to ask any leading questions?
Sure.
Okay, so I'm coming in, and now would you ask me if you can take a minute to survey me first, or would you just come and talk to me?
Well, I hadn't thought of it that way. I was thinking about it the way that I do an interview once I've already had a prospect who has said they're willing to do an interview. So I guess yes, of course. I'd say, well, I see you here in the store. I'm wondering if I could take a moment, talk to you a little bit about why you're here.
Of course you can.
Well, thank you. Glenn, what brought you here?
Well, I've got two dogs at home. Mm-hmm. And I'm interested in getting a Great Dane because I think my wife would love it. I'm a little bit worried about how it would get along with the other two dogs. And I've had situations before where I brought an extra cat into the house and it started a territory war and they just kind of made all over the place, and it was horrible. So I guess I wanted to see if you had any Great Danes, and I wanted to get a little bit of an education about how do you choose a Great Dane, and how do you introduce them to other dogs, and how do you make sure that it doesn't start a territory war. And I guess I've also heard that Great Danes have health problems, so I was hoping you could teach me a little bit about that, or maybe you had a book or something that I could look at.
That was really, really wonderful. Now, if I had been an astute listener and interviewer, what I would have been doing is quickly taking notes on a whole bunch of things that you said. For example, you said you wanted a Great Dane because you thought your wife would like a Great Dane.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, what makes you think your wife would like a Great Dane?
Well, she says she wants a Great Dane.
And what do you imagine it is about a Great Dane that is attractive to her?
Oh, I see. She had a very big dog a long time ago, and she felt very safe. We lived in New York City, and she liked to run around Central Park, and sometimes she had to be out late, and she felt good when the dog was coming home with her in the car, and something about the big presence made her feel very secure. And I think that he was kind of like a substitute for me when I was gone, because, you know, I work a lot, and she can't always be with me, but he's always very cuddly, and I think that's what she likes.
And what kind of dog was that?
That was a great big Doberman.
Uh-huh.
People used to actually say he looked like a Great Dane, but he was Doberman Pinscher. Very, very friendly Doberman Pinscher.
If you don't mind my asking, why not just get a Doberman?
Because people are scared of Dobermans and they're not necessarily scared of Great Danes. And, you know, we live in a neighborhood with a lot of kids. We no longer live in the city. We live up in New Hampshire in the suburbs. And I like to hike and I like to be able to walk with them off leash without worrying that I'm going to give someone a heart attack or they're going to slip and fall on a rock or something like that. That's why.
What else do you know about Great Danes?
I know that the all-white ones can be deaf sometimes, and that's something to be concerned about. I would imagine that because of their size, that if you get one that's ill-bred, it's possible they could have congestive heart failure. I know that they're generally very trainable. They've got a nice temperament for the most part. I don't know much else about them.
And there are other aspects that you talked about. You talked about the type of dog, the size of the dog. How important is the size of the dog?
I'm going to break character for a second to just kind of observe what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying that as I'm talking, you're looking for
areas to probe.
Areas to probe.
You want to avoid asking leading questions. Well, maybe you would prefer a German Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe you would prefer a Bull Mastiff. That would be leading.
Mm-hmm.
Another way of saying that is, are there any other dogs besides a Great Dane that your wife might consider?
Got it.
Are there any other dogs besides a Great Dane your wife might consider?
Oh, I think if there was another dog that I really wanted, she would consider anything. But it's kind of her turn to choose a dog. I chose one, and
what would you choose?
Kind of like the idea of a Great Dane, actually.
You do? Well, what do you like about it?
I like big dogs. I'm a big guy. I'm 6'4", and I weigh 2 1/4, more or less. And I suppose if you think about the relative size of your average dog to me, it's really only like having half a dog. So for me to have the experience of having a full dog, it really has to be a double dog.
I got it.
And so a Great Dane is like a double dog for me.
Uh-huh. And what does it mean to have a double dog?
It's just a nice feeling to have a big thing around the house that...
Nice?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean by nice? Nice means so many different things to people.
Makes me feel secure. I feel like my other dog will have real company that he can run around and play and chase with. My wife is very petite, and it makes me feel secure to know that she'd feel more secure, because I can't really give her all the attention that she needs. That's why. So if I break character again there,
yep.
what you were doing was looking for ambiguous adjectives and trying to clarify them with more dimension. Okay.
There are just like four basic guidelines. One is to avoid leading questions and keep it as open-ended as possible without suggesting an answer. Even a question that gets a yes or a no is suggesting that there's possibly a right or wrong answer.
What do you mean?
Do you want a gentle dog? Yes or no? And there is a presumption that I have in mind a right or wrong answer to that.
I see. You've dug me into a paradigm already, as opposed to asking what kind of a temperament would you like. Got it.
Because maybe it would seem like you're supposed to want a gentle dog. Or if you were a defiant person, you might feel compelled to say, no, I don't want a gentle dog. I want an assertive dog.
So as a interviewer, you really have to clear yourself of any expectations or judgments.
Right. And so you have to avoid leading questions, or even if it's not a leading question, if you don't have an interest in the answer, you're just kind of curious, and that was our dog shaking off his whatever, it might come across to the interviewee that you have a stake in it.
Got it.
Like if I had asked if you want a gentle Great Dane, you might have thought, I thought you should want a gentle Great Dane.
Got it. The first guideline was don't ask leading questions.
Right. Or another way of putting that in a positive way is be as open as possible, even when you have to put up with silence from the interviewee for a moment.
Which is probably the hardest thing, right?
That's the hardest thing. Because the person is silent, and you want to fill in the gap because you're afraid you're going to lose them. That's not true. They're just thinking.
Right.
Edward R. Murrow was famous for his question at the end of any interview he did, no matter what the interview was, he would say, and...
Interesting.
And he could have been on an interview for hours, and no matter when it was, he was at the end, he would say that, and he would just wait. And then they would say something really important. So interesting. So, the idea is to be as open-ended as possible rather than leading. The other two basic rules are probing and clarifying. So you want to probe, there's two parts to probing. You want to probe for breadth. Tell me every single thing about a Great Dane. You know, it has to do with size, it has to do with temperament, it has to do with color, it has to do with health issues. You were going to get all the breadth about Great Danes. And then you want to get depth on each one of those. Tell me about the size. What did you have in mind specifically? I mean, like some people want an oversized Great Dane. They don't want just 110-pound female. They want 150-pound female. Now, there are congestive heart failure possibilities with that, but I'm not going to say that. I need to hear what this person wants.
That's a really easy structure to remember at first.
Probe for breadth.
For breadth first, to go wide and then go deep.
Go wide and go deep. Sometimes the person naturally goes deep on a particular aspect, and so you have to remember to come back up and go for breath again.
And so I think that what's really paramount in all of this is that you maintain a natural human connection with people. So even though we're trying to come up with a couple of rules, that this is an area where you can break all the rules if you have to.
Right.
You can bend
in the paradigm.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is clarifying. And you were saying it, you did a good job of saying it before. When you said nice, well, what does nice mean?
Mm-hmm.
Could mean a whole bunch of things.
Mm-hmm.
Nice could be, oh, this dog has the smoothest coat. When you touch his ears, they feel like velvet. That's so nice. Nice? It's comforting. Ah.
Right. This can be a whole other conversation, but I know that when you're really probing in depth, what you're thinking about is what are the features that create the desired feeling, and then what are those feelings themselves?
Right.
So you can really get dimension from the mood and the tone of the communication.
Right, but even before we're probing for emotional and benefit, although we were going there naturally, but to know what nice means, you know, if anybody says good, better, nice, convenient, those mean different things to different people.
Right.
Beautiful. Picture a beautiful woman. Of course, you're going to picture me. But if we were, because you're a very kind husband. But I've done this in a room full of, you know, like 20 people. And I say, standing outside the door is a beautiful woman. Everybody, take a snapshot in your mind right now. And you go around the room, and you get redheads and blondes and brunettes. You get skinny people. You get voluptuous people.
Oh, I see. that's what tells you that
it means different things. So,
yeah.
So just because someone said, you know, there's a beautiful woman standing outside the door, and I had in my mind what that means, doesn't mean I got what the consumer
mm-hmm.
wanted.
Mm-hmm. When I'm doing qualitative interviews, which isn't really not my forte because I've kind of gone to the quantitative side, but when I'm doing it, one of the things I have in the back of my mind is, how am I going to feed the agency?
Right.
How am I going to feed the advertising agency?
Right.
If someone says, well, it feels nice, and later on I go back and I report back to the advertising agency, okay, I want you to create a dog food picture that makes people feel nice.
Right.
He's going to say, what?
You're kidding me.
What can I do with it?
Right.
And when you know that you're getting at what you need is when there's like a vivid picture that's being painted for you. So that if you had to put together an advertisement, you'd know exactly what to do.
Exactly.
And if you don't have that
textured.
If you don't have that vivid picture in your head yet, then you're not done with the interview.
Right. So yeah. You want to think of all the senses. You want to have a full experience from that person's point of view. You need all the qualifiers. Maybe that's what's called qualitative research, because you're trying to qualify exactly what the person is looking for. So not just a visual picture, but an auditory story. You want to get the sense, the feel, the texture, the dimensions, the smells, the tastes. You know, you ask somebody what they like about apple pie, they'll tell you it tastes good. Well, what is it about the taste? And is it the sweetness? Well, how much sweetness? Is it the tartness? Mm. What's the balance between sweet and tart? It's the amount of apple flavor. And so, like, to dimensionalize all of that is to really understand how to make that person an apple pie.
Yep.
Otherwise, it tastes good, leaves me cold.
That's really cool. So the four rules are to probe and clarify, to avoid asking leading questions. What's the last one?
To probe for breath and probe for depth.
Breath and depth. Got it.
Clarify ambivalent answers or generalized words.
Mm-hmm.
To go from the general to the specific. Feed the agency. Feed your sales letter. And avoid leading questions.
I suppose the biggest mistake you see people making are the leading questions?
Yeah. Well, you know, all of them. They make all those mistakes.
Okay.
Equally.
Okay.
Probably the one that could have the most disastrous effect is leading them to where you want them to be, because so many marketers like, oh my God, I've got this brainstorm, I've got the coolest idea in the whole world, everyone's going to love it, and it turns out, well, it's just not true.
Right.
And that's disastrous. So to ask a leading question where people aren't going to really tell you the truth, that's probably the worst mistake. You're right.
Gotcha. Well, thank you, sweetheart. That was very interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for your time and attention. If you'd like to find out more about the comprehensive marketing research system I've used to succeed in market after market, please visit howtodoubleyourbusiness.com. That's howtodoubleyourbusiness.com.